available in more homes than the Pac-12 Network, we are the Podcast of Champions. Fight! I'm David Woods from Bruin Report Online.
And here he goes, Miles Jack.
And I'm Ryan Abraham from USCFootball.com.
Liner going to try to sneak it ahead. Touchdown, SC!
We are the Podcast of Champions. Welcome back, everybody, to the Podcast of Champions. I'm David Woods from Bruin Report Online, the UCLA site of the Scout.com network.
And I am Ryan Abraham from USCFootball.com, the USC site of the Scout.com network. And we are the Podcast of Champions. Happy New Year, everyone. Happy New Year, Dave. Hope you're having a good one so far.
I'm having a great one, Ryan. How are you feeling this fine morning?
If we're going to go behind the curtain, I'm going to have to be honest. I had a couple adult beverages last night. Have to get up every Friday to do our war room for USCFootball.com. Our subscribers love that. Had to do it on Christmas Day, which was on the East Coast, so it wasn't too bad because getting up early was like 3 hours difference. But today, getting up and do the war room after having some beverages last night and then having to do the Podcast of Champions afterwards, I'm a little hurting right now, Dave.
But this is such a joy. You know, this brings you so much joy. I think this is actually, recording this with me is probably the cure for a hangover.
It might be.
The cure for the common hangover is this podcast.
I'm going to try a breakfast burrito after this, but maybe I won't need it because.
I don't think you're going to need it. I don't think you're going to need it. I think anybody listening to this podcast later on this morning or into the early afternoon, I think any lingering effects of New Year's are going to be abated by this very podcast. This one we're recording right here. If I sound a little chipper, it's because I enjoyed no adult beverages last night, and I went to sleep at about 9 o'clock. It was
wow.
Great. Yeah.
Well, props to you, Dave. You're a better man than me.
The beauty of having a two-year-old. the beauty of having a two-year-old.
Just kind of forced your hand there. Well, okay, So what we're going to do today, Dave, I'm going to give the information about how to get a hold of us and all that kind of stuff. But we have 5 bowl games to recap, and our picks are on fire. Just to let you
they're fire emoji, fire emoji, fire emoji.
We are 5-1-1 against the spread picking in the Pac-12 games. So that's pretty good. We'll make you a lot of money in Las Vegas. So we're going to recap the 5 games. We'll try not to go too long into that. And then, of course, we've got 3 games coming up. One of them today, we are recording this New Year's morning, as you can probably tell by the hangover talk. We're going to try to do it New Year's Eve, a little technical difficulty. So apologize for a little bit later podcast, but I'm excited. We got a lot to do in the show, Dave.
Yeah, it's going to be a ton of fun. So throw them our contact info. Let's get this going.
So our website is pac12podcast.com. If you want to check out our blog, we put up our picks, we put up our rankings during the season, and of course, we put up every single episode of the Podcast of Champions. If you want to email us, that's a great way. You can get your questions in pac12podcast@gmail.com. Voicemail, we love getting these. 641-715-3900 is the number, extension 734-972. And if you want to subscribe, you know, you got to listen. We're going to do this during the off season. Go to iTunes.com, slurch your way over to iTunes and slurch for Podcast of Champions. That's us, the Pac-12 podcast. Ryan and Dave bringing it to you.
The slurch. Yeah. The slurch. It's so good. It's so good.
We'll probably do a lot of recruiting stuff, Dave, I would think, over the next month. And we'll get, like, you know, Brandon Huffman and Greg Biggins and some of the scout guys on to talk about the Pac-12 as a whole, how they're recruiting and all that kind of stuff. So if you have questions about recruiting of the team, send them in to pac12podcast@gmail.com.
Great stuff. And so we've got 5 whole games to recap today. We've got 3 games to preview. We've got tons to do. Should we just jump right into it?
I think we should, Dave. I think we should get right into our
Pac-12 Roundup.
Oh, yeah.
All right, so the first game we're going to talk about. So we already talked about Arizona and Utah, both wins for the Pac-12, but more importantly, split.
Both covers.
Huh?
Both covers.
No, one was a tie.
One was a tie,
yeah,
right.
So that was our tie. So that was we were 1-0-1 after the first kind of round, the 2, and then we got 5 more here where we did pretty well. Like I said, we're 5-1-1 overall. And so let's talk first about
Washington State Cougars.
Against Miami. This one was a cover for Washington State, but it actually got a little close and a little tricky there at the end in the Sun Bowl. Washington State won 20-14 over Miami. But if you watch this game, Miami really cooged it there at the end. They had like a 70-yard drive that ended, I think it was like, you know, very late in the fourth quarter at this point, and they were driving down by six. And they had a 70-yard drive that ended with a fumble inside the 5-yard. And Washington State recovered. Didn't do anything on offense after that, but then Miami followed that up with an interception, and that was all she wrote. But Washington State, this was kind of a scenario where they hung on to win.
Yeah,
it was 20-7-ish at one point, and then they really got nothing going offensively in the second half. Had a bunch of three and outs in a row. And Miami almost was able to pull it off. Luckily for us, they didn't kick a field goal or anything, and we got the cover win out of this one, but it was close. I was a little nervous watching this one.
Yeah, it was, Washington State -3. And if you got to watch the game, hopefully you got to see the second half when there was snow everywhere in El Paso, Texas. So I was in Washington DC for the holidays with my, family, my sister's house there. And, it was like 65 degrees, 70 degrees. It was warmer than LA. And then we're watching this bowl game. Like, it is snowing like sideways in El Paso. It was pretty funny. But yeah, the second half, I don't know if the snow just, you know, impacted Luke Falk all that much. He was 2 of 11 for 11 yards in the fourth quarter. They didn't get any points in the second half. So maybe the snow really did bother him, but I think that's a great way to describe it. Miami cooged it big time. They had 3 turnovers. They're all in Washington State territory. 2 of them inside the 5-yard line. And they had a TD pass that turned into an interception. And, you know, it would look like he was caught and, you know, flipped back over. It was kind of crazy. So I think Washington State's kind of lucky, I think, to win this game, but give them credit. You know, they didn't play well offensively in the second half, but the defense kind of came up big, and Miami really is probably kicking themselves at this point, knowing that, man, they had this game if they really wanted it.
Yeah, and, you know, it was obviously a weird end of the season for Washington State, but it was a win. But, yeah, if you look at that second half, here's Washington State drives. So the first 2 drives were actually pretty good. They had 10 plays, 48 yards, but they turned it over on downs. And then the next drive, 7 plays, 56 yards, and turned it over on downs. So they were in kind of that weird fourth down position. But then it went 3 plays punt, 3 plays punt, 5 plays punt, 3 plays punt, 3 plays punt, and then 5 plays, 14 yards at the end of the game. So offense really, really struggled in the second half. I mean, it was Luke Falk's, you know, after, what was it, a full month of, you know, being off and, you know, including the Apple Cup, a little bit over a month. So he was probably a little bit rusty. The offense wasn't quite humming the way it was at the end of the year. But Washington State finished with 9 wins. I mean, in a year where people were just kind of hoping they'd be bowl eligible after last year's kind of disappointment of a season. And now going into next year, I think a lot of people are thinking of Washington State as a legitimate contender in the North, which is kind of shocking considering where they were, not even just a year ago, but where they were after the first game of the season, losing to Portland State. And now to be here, I mean, they're a weird loss against Portland State from being a 10-win team right now. That's a real turnaround, and you got to give credit to Leach and that entire team for that.
Yeah, no more hot seat for Leach.
Not at all.
Yeah, I think that you know helped him. It's making the North all that much more interesting for next year. We'll talk about a lot during the offseason. I don't know if you saw the play where that terrible interception. They had the running back kind of go out wide and throw it, just a complete duck that was picked off. That was awful. It was for Miami doing that.
Yeah, that was one of the worst tricky type plays I think I've seen this year. that was a disaster. So Wazoo finishes 9 wins. That's great.
Yeah.
For Wazoo.
And congrats to Dom Williams and Gabe Marks. They both finished with 1,000 yards receiving. So it was the first time Cougar receiver tandem did that in school history. So nice for those guys. It was nice to get Gabe Marks back too, I think, for this game.
And
of course Luke Falk. So all right, the Cougs win. We covered -3, so we got that pick right. The next game, another day after Christmas game, was
UCLA Bruins
against Nebraska. UCLA lost to a 5-7 team in the Foster Farms Bowl. You know, this is one of those games where I think when we were talking about motivation and all those sorts of things coming into this week, we were, you know, I think we both mentioned this is an obvious one where UCLA might not be the more motivated team. And I think we saw that to an extent. UCLA was in pretty good shape in the first half. They went up 21-7 at one point, but it wasn't smoke and mirrors exactly, but Nebraska was pretty much able to move the ball most of the game. They ran the ball over 300 yards. And UCLA had no answer for Tommy Armstrong, but more to the point, they had no answer for any type of running game that Nebraska wanted to do. Straight ahead runs, option type stuff, zone read type stuff, no answer whatsoever. Run defense is a huge issue for UCLA all year. It's going to be an issue going into the offseason. They've got to figure out some answers there. But Nebraska was able to run it all over them. You have to say about Nebraska, they're much better than a typical 5-7 team. They should have been, you know, by advanced stats, they should have been over 500 this year. They probably should have been like a 7-5, 8-4 type team. But they got very, very unlucky in close games. UCLA, very disappointing end of the season. Finishing 8-5, with, you know, two back-to-back losses against USC and now Nebraska. But it was not a pretty game for UCLA. The second half, I'm trying to remember the stat, but I think in the third quarter they had two offensive yards.
I think it was 201-1.
Okay.
That's what I wrote down. But
yeah, they had their two drives that ended in the third quarter. I mean, they only had two complete offensive drives. Were three plays minus 2 yards and three plays minus 2 yards. So that tells you pretty much what you need to know there. But yeah, ugly game. I think it thankfully ends the season for UCLA. I think they kind of limped to the finish. I don't think they were particularly motivated in this one, and it showed.
It was a weird kind of wave of momentum shifts. And a lot of times college football games and bowl games in general are like that. But I think it was the Tommy Armstrong fumble early in the game, and then it, you know, UCLA gets the ball back. They go up 21-7 and looks, kind of like they're rolling in this one. But at that point, it just, you know, the Huskers took back over. You could tell that Nebraska had a plan in place about, you know, sticking with the run. And even, you know, the problem is you can kind of get behind schedule sometimes with a holding call or turnover, like you saw with that fumble that UCLA, you know, punched in and went up a couple of touchdowns. But they never got out of that game plan. And because the UCLA run defense was so bad, you had some funny tweets and about that, but they just kind of kept going at it and, you know, and just took over the game. Like you said, it was a 201. That's why I wrote, maybe it's not the exact number, 201-1 yard advantage in the third quarter for Nebraska. But then UCLA comes back and they're only down 8. But then a couple of bad drives. They rolled out Josh Rosen, which doesn't seem like you're playing to his strengths. And, but, you know, in general, the theme of the game for me, Dave, was when Nebraska was running the football, even if they made contact at the line of scrimmage, they were falling forward and they were getting 3, 4, 5 extra yards after contact almost on every carry. And that was just going to be too hard to sustain throughout the whole game for UCLA.
Yeah. I mean, especially after, I think the first quarter or so, I thought UCLA's run defense was okay. They weren't doing that quite yet, but starting about the second quarter on, completely right. I mean, it was, they would hit the hole, and then no matter what, they were getting 4 yards. Just 4 yards, 4 yards, 4 yards, 8 yards, 4 yards, 4 yards, and it was just, it's not sustainable. I think the bend but don't break style of defense, it can work, but your personnel has to be pretty much perfect, and UCLA's was not this year. And the defensive line, they were playing, UCLA plays kind of an undersized linebacker at one of the defensive end positions because they're essentially running a hybrid 3-4-4-3. But, you know, Nebraska was able to run at his side quite a bit and just, you know, kind of open up holes at will. And it's just, I think it's fundamentally a schematic flaw, but, UCLA didn't really have much of a way to adjust to what Nebraska was doing. And weirdly, they seemed almost a little confused about Tommy Armstrong's ability to run because, and it's kind of weird because he was, you know, he ran for almost 800 yards last season. I mean, he hasn't run quite as much this year, but this guy is a guy who can definitely run, and they seemed a little confused about what it was he was doing out there. But yeah, I mean, the run defense was this most significant issue. UCLA went into this game, we should say something positive. UCLA went into this game with only six healthy offensive linemen, lost one of them in the game. So they were playing with a walk-on starter at left guard, a guy who was a defensive lineman last week at right guard, a redshirt freshman tackle at right tackle who's, you know, played sparingly this year. And the offensive line didn't do badly. They gave up one sack. They didn't run the ball particularly well, but they didn't really try to run the ball that much. But UCLA's offensive line played pretty well despite some losses, and that's obviously good going into next year because UCLA has now lost one, two, three definite starters from this year, and then one starter was academically ineligible for the game, and the other starter is still determining whether or not he's going to leave early. So UCLA could be breaking in an entirely new offensive line next year.
Yeah, that was weird. It was NFL-like, where, you know, a guy gets hurt in the NFL on the offensive line. They're like, oh, there's only seven on the roster. Like, really? Like, but it was weird. You had like six on the roster going into the game. Like, you just don't hear that in college very much.
Yeah, a bunch of dudes just were hurt or academically ineligible or have already retired, or in the case of Alex Redmond, had already left school to go out to the NFL draft. So, yeah, they were definitely undermanned heading into the game.
The Nate Gary, the safety for Nebraska that ended up getting tossed, caused a pretty big stir on Twitter. I wanted to get your take on that, Dave.
Well, I thought it was ridiculous. I mean, that was almost a perfect form tackle, the targeting call that he got thrown out on. I mean, it was a completely perfect tackle. I mean, if you saw Jim Mora over on the sideline, he was basically telling him, hey, that was perfect. I don't know why you're getting thrown out, but that was ridiculous.
That was so cool. You could see them talking, and him, you know, for the opposing head coach to be like, bro, man, that sucked. Like, that just shouldn't have happened.
Well, Mora's been very fed up with officiating this year, so I completely buy him taking the side of anyone who's, you know, getting slightly screwed by the officials. But yeah, I thought it was ridiculous. I thought that was one of the, I mean, if you were watching that as like a football person, you're like, wow, that was one of the best tackles I've seen all season.
Right.
And, oh, okay. I guess it's targeting because he incidentally hit, I think it was Paul Perkins, incidentally hit his helmet. I mean, if anything, Perkins was the one who kind of drove his helmet into Gary. I mean, it was just, I don't know. That kind of stuff, I think they really need to reevaluate what they're looking for on targeting, because that kind of thing, okay, if you want to call that on the field, okay. You want to be, you know, safety first, the whole deal. But when that goes to review, it has to be overturned, because there was clearly A, no intent, and B, I mean, it was really incidental contact. I mean, there wasn't a whole lot there, so I didn't get how that could be reviewed. I completely understand where on the field, go overboard and call it all targeting. But when it goes to review, you can't sustain that. That's ridiculous.
Yeah. That was absolutely ridiculous. So that was kind of put a little damper on the beginning of the game, but it's just one of those things. That we've seen that theme a lot in these bowl games, which sucks. And hopefully they can change the rule.
Yeah. It's unfortunate.
All right. Next game. I might have got a little out of order. I think these were on the same day. I think this was the day after Christmas Bowl as well.
Yep. Washington Huskies.
Against Southern Miss. I keep waiting. It's so weird. I keep waiting for our sound effect for the other team. And of course we don't have one. Washington beat Southern Miss 44-31, an offensive explosion for Washington in this one. This one went pretty much, I think, how we expected. Didn't we call this as potentially a double digit win?
We did. Oh, yeah. So the UCLA game, the Bruins were favored by 6.5, and we both took Nebraska in the points. So we did win that one since Nebraska won outright. This one, Washington was favored by 8.5. And we kind of felt they'd win by maybe a little more than that, I think, which they did.
Yeah. Yeah. And they did. This was really, it was kind of the Myles Gaskin show, but it was interesting. Gaskin threw the first, I want to say like his first 10 carries or so, he had like 13 yards, and then he kind of just blew up over the second half of this game. Washington was really starting to be able to control it on the ground. And they put together some nice drives. This is kind of what we were talking about all year, or towards the end of the year. I don't think anybody wants to play Washington right now. I think they're ending the season in a really, really good way. I think they've got a lot to be positive about going into next year. Jake Browning seemed to get really comfortable towards the second half of the year and started to, look more and more like he's going to go into next season as, feeling like a seasoned starter. You've got to be really excited about Myles Gaskin, but most importantly, you've got to be really excited about that defense. Southern Miss has a good offense.
Yeah.
And the defense was able to make enough plays here and there to kind of keep them down a little bit. It wasn't, one of those elite performances we've seen from Washington's defense this year, but in spots, they were really good. And it was more than enough to have a comfortable win in a bowl game, send Washington into the offseason with a winning record, which I don't think anybody would have predicted before the year. Big win for Washington. Great job by Chris Peterson to get this team to 7-6 this year.
Early on, I looked to me, it was kind of like a men versus boys thing, but I was impressed the way Southern Miss kind of came back. And the Washington defense looked pretty elite. I think it was the first couple drives. And then Southern Miss hit that like long, touchdown pass. And then it became, a closer game. There was a Washington turnover, I think early in the second half, where Southern Miss ended up tying it at 24. And kind of like what Nebraska did, I think Washington did the same thing. They just kind of pounded it on the ground. Gaskin had this 86-yard touchdown run that I thought was kind of the key turning point there. Like you said, they killed it on the ground. Gaskin ended up having four touchdowns. Jake Browning didn't throw a touchdown pass, but he didn't have any interceptions. He wasn't making mistakes. He let the ground game kind of, just take things over. And I thought they were patient enough, Dave, because it looked like there was times you could press where Southern Miss kept coming back, but they stuck to the game plan. I think the defense played well enough, like you said, against a very good, Southern Miss offense. And, they averaged, the Golden Eagles averaged 191 yards on the ground, and they only had 22 yards rushing on 30 carries. So yeah, they made some big plays in the passing game, but Washington was able to stifle that run game and eventually let their run game just kind of take over and win this game like we thought they would.
Yeah, and they ran the ball for over 6 yards a carry in this game.
Wow.
Which is pretty darn impressive. Not only just Gaskin, but, Jaylon Mickens had a kind of a tricky play for a touchdown. Jake Browning ran for 28 yards on 5 carries himself. So they got a lot of contributions from a lot of guys. I think just, their offense might, Southern Miss defense isn't very good, but Washington's offense had a couple of nice performances, especially over the last half of the season. That makes you think that, something was starting to click a little bit there. They were really bad offensively at the beginning of the year, but maybe something was starting to click by the end of the year, and that gives you even more hope heading into next year. But that Pac-12 North is starting to look really competitive going into next year because you got the two Washington schools, you've got Stanford, you've got Oregon. That could be a Pac-12 South-esque fight for the top in the North.
Yeah, and what if Cal wins 11 games again? There'd be a whole bunch of things going on in the North. Did you see the Statue of Liberty play? I thought that was pretty cool. It didn't score a touchdown. It wasn't as good as the Chris Peterson Boise State versus Oklahoma.
No, but it was pretty sweet.
It was pretty cool.
Sweet to watch.
It was like, oh, that's nice. That's what we want to see.
Exactly. That's what we want to see in a bowl game.
Yeah.
Have fun with it.
Some cool stuff. All right, should we move on?
Let's move on.
To another Pac-12 North team that did not win 11 games. I wrote that down. I guess it wasn't true. I didn't remember.
Weird. I could have sworn they were a shoo-in for 11-1.
Didn't happen. But yeah, I thought they had a good season.
California Golden Bears.
So this is the one team that did not go according to plan. They did not do what we wanted them to do.
No.
But they won, and that's the most important thing. Cal, 55, Air Force, 36. This was a pretty significant blowout win for Cal. Finished the year 8-5. Kind of an up-and-down year for Cal, but finishing on a high note with this one, and really, really awesome performance from Jared Goff here. Went 25 of 37 for 467 yards and 6 touchdowns. I think there was some talk that he had some nagging injuries all year, but I think he got very healthy for this game and put together one of his best performances of the season. At one point in the third quarter, this was, I think it was 45-21 at one point. So this got to be, blowout territory pretty early in the third quarter. But they dominated. I think we both picked Air Force outright.
Oh, yeah.
But Cal came to play, and they pretty much handled everything Air Force wanted to do, put their stamp on them in a big way, offensively.
Yeah, I unfortunately don't have much on this one. This was, I was watching on my iPad, and it wasn't going the way that, you know, I was visiting my family. It wasn't going the way I was. Like, man, Cal just kept scoring and scoring. Not that we're not rooting against. We're rooting for our picks. So if we pick something, it doesn't matter. You know, we're Pac-12 honks here. We're the podcast of champions. We want the Pac-12 to do well in the bowl games, but, you know, our picks matter. You know, we want to.
Our picks are the most important thing in the world.
So I was like, man, Cal just, I mean, everything was going right. You remember the early part of the season when Cal was going on that run and went 5-0 or whatever it was, or was it 4-0, something like that. And we were talking about the, 11-1 and all that kind of stuff. I mean, they looked a lot more like that. And Jared Goff, maybe it's that he got healthy, but he helped himself quite a bit. I think people were kind of getting down on him a little bit more, but he was dropping dimes all over the place, showing that arm off. And I think that's going to help him, you know, at the next level, you know, going into the draft. And it's official now. He's going to the NFL draft, but I think he needed a kind of game like that. I don't think either of us expected he was going to come out and play like gangbusters again, but he did. And if he was going to do that, Air Force just wasn't going to be able to catch up. They did some good things offensively, but the Cal defense, I thought, played well. And of course, Jared Goff went absolutely bonkers.
Absolutely. And, you know, I thought they handled that Air Force rushing attack pretty well. You know, Air Force was going to get some yards because it's kind of a weird offense to go up against, but I thought they handled it for the most part pretty well. You know, Air Force rushed for 285 yards, but it wasn't like, you know, they were just gashing them all day. I thought all in all, it was a pretty good performance for Cal. Obviously, they go into next year with a lot of questions now. You know, lose some receivers, they lose Goff. That offense could take a step back. I think Dykes announced this week that Luke Rubenzer, who had switched to safety, is going to switch back to quarterback to factor into that competition next year. But they've got some questions there. And, you know, I think people were hoping that this Cal year would be enough that it could kind of sustain Cal's recruiting through next year, which could be a tough year again. And I think they got there. I think 8-5 is a good number. I think that's something that can give Dykes, you know, something to sell on the recruiting trail, that he can pitch to recruits. But next year could be, you know, back to a kind of a tough year. But if they can get a good recruiting class in there, build a little bit of momentum going into this season, then they should be able to kind of bounce back within the next couple of years and, you know, get back to a consistently good program, which would be nice to see for Cal.
Do you have the turnover numbers in front of you for both teams?
Let's see. Let's see.
Sorry,
what we
I didn't
got.
Mean to put you on the spot there.
I've got 3 turnovers for Air Force and 1 for Cal.
So, yeah, I think when we did the preview, I really felt that Cal was going to need to force a bunch of turnovers, but I didn't feel that the Air Force offense was one of the, you know, because they're running the triple, there wasn't going to be like a whole bunch of turnovers. It got a few, and I think that certainly helped, but I didn't think turnovers were going to be as big of a factor. You know, getting 3, I think, you know, it's nice, but it wasn't. I just felt that when the Cal defense played well, it was because they forced a bunch of turnovers. I just didn't see that happening with Air Force. But, you know, a couple of that, you get a few of those, and Goff, you know, going bonkers. It seemed to all work well for Cal, which is good to see.
That's too much for an Air Force team to handle. I mean, when Cal was looking that explosive offensively, there wasn't much way that Air Force was going to win that game. They needed Goff to play kind of the way he's played a lot of the year, you know, pretty good, but nothing spectacular. And this was spectacular Goff, and there was no way Air Force was going to hang with him on a night when he was playing like this.
Yeah. All right. So we have,
we got one more.
One more recap.
We got one more to talk about.
I was at this one, and
Were you?
Yeah, it is.
Was Clay helping?
USC Trojan.
Sorry.
No, I was just, you know, trolling a little bit. Wisconsin won 23-21 over USC in the Holiday Bowl. I think my favorite part of this game was your tweet, or it might have been your tweet, it might have been somebody else, but I think everybody tweeted about simultaneously on that last drive when Kessler threw the, like, 7-yard out when he needed 10 yards on 4th and 10. And everyone just was like, oh,
that's just the perfect way for this USC season to end. On a 2-minute drive where they're running it like it's an 8-minute drive, they throw underneath on a 4th and 10.
It was perfect. It was the microcosm of the entire season. Cody Kessler's career, at least this year, he just, seemed to regress a little bit from where he was last year, the 39 touchdowns and 5 picks. Just wasn't the same, David. He, it's kind of been a check down thing. And I think with Clay Helton, we've asked about that. And the 2-minute drill hasn't been good. They looked like they were trying to run the clock out against Stanford, down a couple touchdowns. Same thing against, or a couple scores, same thing against Notre Dame, where they're dumping the ball off when you know you have to push the ball down the field. And we would ask them about it and ask Clay Helton. He's like, that's what we teach him to do. Cody Kessler's doing the right thing. If it's not open deep, you take what the defense has given you, which doesn't really make any sense when you have to score twice in 4 minutes. You can't dump the ball off for 4 yards and have the clock keep running. And with 7 seconds left near midfield, you need to get it. You either score a touchdown or get in field goal range. There's really not a lot of time to get in field goal range with 7 seconds. And it's 4th and 10. So you're pretty much handcuffed to throwing the ball in the end zone and trying
to win. Did everyone realize it was 4th down? Because it didn't seem like anyone realized it was 4th down.
Well, okay, so Clay Helton afterwards said that he called a Hail Mary, and that's what it was supposed to be. Cody Kessler, and he said, made the right decision or something, I'm going to paraphrase, but that saw that you could get a quick out and try to get 10 yards. And he tried to make a good play, but the receiver didn't get deep enough and they ran out of time, so Cody Kessler said that he checked to that, like he was going to, he saw Rodgers would have been open and, it called the audible or whatever, was going to try to get a quick 10 yards, which doesn't make a whole lot of sense because you're still going to have to throw a Hail Mary. You weren't going to be in field goal range after that. And then sort of threw Darius Rodgers under the bus, telling that he didn't know what the down and distance was. He didn't realize it was 4th down. Didn't realize you needed 10 yards, cut it off. They threw the ball out of bounds 7 yards. It wasn't complete anyway. It was just a complete gaffe. And like we said, it was kind of a perfect microcosm of the entire season. There's only one decision there, is throw the ball in the end zone. And the fact that somehow it came to the point where they were changing the play and one guy didn't know what the down and distance was. It was absolutely perfect. But yeah, USC did not deserve to win that game, and they almost won that game a couple of different ways. They took the lead late in the game, which was kind of crazy.
That was nuts. Kind of the same thing that Miami was doing, but they actually did punch it in for the touchdown. I guess from the macro perspective, because you've got the finger on the pulse of the USC fan base, the Clay Helton era, as the interim and now the head coach, he's gone 5-4, beat UCLA, then lost to Stanford, lost this game, opens next season with Alabama, so he opens next season with Alabama. how are people feeling right now after this one, where they did look so kind of disorganized and confused at the end of this game?
Yeah, I think Clay Helton had a lot of supporters and still does, but there's a lot of people that are really shaking their head. Not that they're mad at Clay Helton or disappointed. I think they're more disappointed in the administration that you hired this guy basically because his stock was very high after beating UCLA, and they were all excited about beating UCLA. But he's lost 3 of his last 4 games, 2 of them convincingly to Oregon and Stanford, where it wasn't competitive, and then losing in the bowl game to Wisconsin, which they were definitely a more talented team. Let a quarterback like Joel Stave, who, had more interceptions and touchdowns, look like, it was Kevin Hogan or something. I think there's a lot of the fans that are just like, man, what's going on? They just signed this guy. His career really hasn't even started yet, and they've lost their last 2, 3 of the last 4, and they're just kind of dreading what the future of USC football can be, because it doesn't look, it hasn't looked good so far. Now, Clay Helton took over someone else's team. It's going to be his first offseason, his first, finishing of the recruiting class and all that stuff. So we don't really know, but I don't think it's a great start. It's not the step forward you would want to be taking if you're Clay Helton going into 2016, when you're facing a very tough schedule starting with Alabama.
Yeah. So, all right. So USC ends the season 8-6. Pac-12 South in general, just not a good year.
No.
Should we get into our previews?
Yeah, I think we should. Let's see. So we have three more games left for the Pac-12. Pretty good start. The only schools that have lost so far are the LA schools that we know pretty well. I think they got a good shot at these last three as well. So and we do have previews from our experts on scout.com. So let's start with
Stanford Cardinals.
Number 6 Stanford is taking on number 5 Iowa in the Rose Bowl. 11-2 Stanford versus 12-1 Iowa. This game will be on at what time is this game on, Ryan?
That's a very good question. Let me pull it up real quick. I think that's funny. The Rose Bowl, they have their the set time. It's 2 p.m. Pacific.
Yeah, that's so weird. Why don't they have it on a little bit later?
I don't know. Strange. But part of the reason why you have the playoff games on New Year's Eve is because the Rose Bowl doesn't want to move their time. They're always going to be the same time. But then you have like other bowls that are like the Sugar Bowl, I think, would say the same thing. Like, well, we're not moving ours too. It's like, well, you don't have the same tradition that the Rose Bowl has. But yeah, so 2 p.m. Pacific, 5 p.m. Eastern for the Rose Bowl.
On ESPN, Stanford is favored by 6 in this one. Let's hear from our man RJ.
Our man RJ, right here. Here you go.
The Stanford Cardinal looks to make history January 1st at the 102nd Rose Bowl against a very similar to the Cardinal, Iowa Hawkeye. Stanford quarterback Kevin Hogan will become only the third quarterback in college football history to start 3 Rose Bowl games, and he'll become the first Pac-12 quarterback to ever to do so. If the Cardinal wins, he'll become the second quarterback in Stanford history to win 2 Rose Bowls in the final game of his collegiate career. Health-wise, the Cardinal checks out pretty good. Heading into the January 1st showdown, the secondary is back to full health. Senior cornerback Ronnie Harris is a full go at this point, as is the rest of the Cardinal, headed into the showdown against a very rugged Iowa Hawkeye team. The Cardinal will look to ride off into the Pasadena sunset by righting the wrong of a very disappointing opening week loss to a Big Ten school. In this case, it's Iowa and not Northwestern. Stanford, Iowa, in the Rose Bowl, January 1st. For the podcast of champions and thebootleg.com, this is RJ Abadia.
We got to work on his pausing there. A little.
Yeah, jeez. RJ sounded a little worse for wear. I'm going to blame that on New Year's Eve as well.
There you go, RJ.
So I've got Iowa to cover in this one. I think they're two very similar teams, and David Shaw has shown a willingness when he's going up against a power football team to kind of just, you know, not play down to them, but play their game and play his game and just, you know, grind it out and do that whole thing. And I think this is going to be a 3-point game either way. I think 6 points is just too much. You know, I think Stanford's going to be able to run the ball a fair amount on Iowa. You know, Christian McCaffrey's really good and they've got a great offensive line. But Iowa's defense is good. Their offensive line is good. I think they're going to be able to run the ball pretty consistently on Stanford's defense. Stanford's defense might be the worst unit on the field in this game, and they're not bad, but I just, you know, Iowa's pretty decent on both sides. Stanford's defense is just they're just okay. They're not great. Stanford's offense, though, is the best unit of the four. So I think it's going to be a close game. I think it's going to be very much a one-score game, and I think it's going to be Stanford by a field goal, but I can't pick them to cover 6. I think that's too many in a game like this.
Oh, okay. So all our bowl picks have been the same. I think I'm going to go with our boy RJ. I'm going to go with the Cardinal. Watching Alabama and Michigan State last night, not very impressed with what I saw. I think Stanford and Iowa are similar, like you said, but I think Stanford's just going to do it better. So I, my gut feeling, and I don't know why. I mean, listen to what you said, Dave. It makes sense. My gut feeling though is that Stanford's going to win this one by 10 points or so. So I'm going to take Stanford for this one.
I'll be honest with you. That was my feeling up until about, like 2 minutes ago.
Really?
And then I decided to be clever. And, so we're going to be clever now. This is how much thought we put into these picks, guys, just so you know.
Well, hey, it's been working. We're
I know.
it's, you know, I think we're doing a good job on that. So yeah, that'll be a good one. I mean, the two playoff games were pretty much duds if you like competitive games. But, you know, the Houston, Florida State one I thought was pretty interesting as far as New Year's Six Bowls go. This one could be, but I'm kind of getting the feeling Stanford's going to stretch its legs a little bit and just kind of pull away. We'll see. We'll see what happens there. But that's a little bit later on today.
Absolutely. And then we've got a couple of games tomorrow, correct?
Yeah, a couple on the second, which is weird. First one up is
Oregon Ducks.
So number 15, Oregon is taking on number 11, TCU, in the Alamo Bowl. But Trevon Boykin, TCU's quarterback, is suspended for the game after, I think, attempting to assault a police officer. In any case, this game will take place at 3:45 p.m. on ESPN on the 2nd. Oregon is currently favored by 7. I wouldn't be shocked if that continues to climb heading into game day. But let's hear what Steve Summers has to say about the game.
Here you go.
The Oregon Ducks face the TCU Horned Frogs in the Valero Alamo Bowl on Saturday in a game up until this morning appeared to be a high-scoring, whoever has the ball last wins affair. But this morning, that has all changed. Sometime after midnight last night, TCU quarterback Trevon Boykin was arrested for assaulting a San Antonio police officer and is now in jail pending release on a $5,000 bond. Boykin and wide receiver Preston Miller have been suspended for the bowl game, according to a release from the TCU Athletic Department. And the incident, which occurred in downtown San Antonio, occurred early this morning after Boykin had been in his team hotel room for midnight curfew check. Details of the incident are still rolling in, but from what I gather, the San Antonio police are normally very lenient on people on the Riverwalk. Unless the individual gets out of hand with the cops, then all bets are off. The Riverwalk here in San Antonio is expected to attract over 200,000 people tonight, but clearly Trevon Boykin won't be one of them. We'll get some reaction from Oregon defensive coordinator Don Pelham this afternoon when the Ducks defense take the podium for the Valero Alamo Bowl Week interview series. Likely what Pelham will have to say that is doesn't matter who the Horned Frog quarterback will be, the Ducks will prepare the same way. Duck fans, of course, are hoping that preparation won't result in some sort of offensive record that seems to have plagued the Ducks all defense all season long, so we'll see what happens. So reporting live from San Antonio, Texas, I'm Steve Summers of educk.com.
All right, so good stuff from Steve there. Yeah, it does kind of change the nature of things for Boykin to be out in this one. I think everyone was expecting kind of an offensive, just, you know, slugfest, because neither team's defense is particularly good this year. TCU's because of injury, Oregon's because it's just not very good this year. But now with Boykin out, TCU was already kind of a little injured and beat up on offense, but with Boykin out, that really changes the game. I think Oregon's gonna be able to win this one pretty comfortably. Their offense was firing on a really high level at the end of the year. They did have that little scare against Oregon State where the defense looked dreadful, so I'm sure they'll make, you know, TCU's backup situation look pretty good in this one. If Oregon State was able to move the ball on them pretty well, you know, TCU should be able to. But it's not going to be at the level it would have been with Boykin. I like Oregon to win this one by probably about 10 points. I think they're going to be pretty comfortably in control in this game, and I think Vernon Adams is going to have a big performance against that TCU defense.
Actually, I wrote down I put our picks together before you even said anything. I thought Ryan and Dave both pick Oregon. I just kind of knew that you were going to do that, and I'm going to pick them too. I think Vernon Adams is the highest rated quarterback in the country.
Yeah.
Even though he missed a couple of a couple of games there with the broken finger. Sometimes in a bowl game, distractions can, you know, work both. I just don't think losing your quarterback. He was a guy that wanted to be a police officer. He insults one.
Yeah.
At the Riverwalk. Yeah, Dave, you and I both have been down to San Antonio around New Year's Eve on the Riverwalk, having a few cocktails and such. And I never once felt I wanted to punch a police officer. I just, you know, I wanted to jump in that river or something every once in a while, but never want to punch a police officer. So that's just weird. I can't see that going well.
Yeah, that wouldn't be on my list of, like, you know, it wouldn't be on my bucket list to, you know, punch a cop when I'm, like, drunk after midnight. Like among, like, things to do that's just, I mean, first of all, it's, you know, it's not good to punch anyone, kids. Don't punch anyone. But, like, I don't know. I'm not super interested in getting shot. Like, I'm not down for that. I don't want to get shot. And I think if I punched a cop, I there's a pretty good chance I'm going to get shot.
Yeah. They have guns.
I don't want that.
Yeah.
I mean, swimming drunkenly in a river, there's a chance I might drown. But, you know, that's a dumb choice I can make for myself. But, yeah. No, you get drunk and you make stupid decisions. That kind of thing happens. I'm sure he's going to learn from it. I'm sure this is going to be a big, you know, black mark on his reputation going into the NFL and all that kind of stuff. But yeah, he's going to have to learn from this, and hopefully he does, and he makes better decisions in the future.
Wait, it's funny. So San Antonio, like, I'd never really been there much, but now if you cover recruiting, you've probably been there quite a bit, usually around, and I'm actually flying out there Sunday. I know, Dave, you were there last year, I believe, for the Alamo Bowl, but we cover the Army All-American game, and now they've actually moved it a little bit later. So I'll be there the week prior to the game, covering the recruits and all that kind of stuff. But yeah, we've spent a lot of New Year's Eve in San Antonio just because of, you know, the Army Bowl. And, you kind of do the same things, you know, after a while. I can see, like, it's kind of a fun thing, but, you know, going to the Alamo, you only really get to do that once. And after that, like, you don't really want to go again.
Right.
But, man, it's just hard to picture how that would end up happening. And, you know, the report I read where he was, you know, bed check at midnight, he was there and then went out again. It's just baffling to me that something like this could happen. How important it is, you want to try to win these bowl games and stuff, and to end your career like that, it's just a head scratcher. I mean, everyone says, you know, he's a nice kid and stuff. Everyone makes mistakes. You feel bad for him, but man, this could haunt him for a while. He's going to be answering a lot of questions going through the NFL draft process about what happened in San Antonio.
Oh yeah. I mean, this is going to be one of those character questions, and he'll have to answer it well. And I'm, you know, everything I heard about him prior to this was that he's a good kid. So, you know, he can probably lean on his reputation and, you know, go through it that way. But yeah, sometimes it's a problem with bowl games. Not, you know, kids are going to go out and go punch cops, but the motivation level, the attention level, the, you know, the focus just isn't there. Because it's the Alamo Bowl, and it's, you know, the second Pac-12 Bowl and the, you know, second or third Big 12 Bowl. So everyone's kind of, from a fan perspective, kind of excited about the matchup. But these kids, TCU and Oregon both, these two teams thought they had a real chance to be playoff teams this year, and now they're in the Alamo Bowl. So, you know, Trevon Boykin's going out and, I mean, first of all, just going out and getting drunk the week of your bowl game. I mean, this is what, 3 days before the game?
Yeah.
I mean, that's a little questionable just in and of itself. And yeah, it happens during bowl week because no one cares about bowl games. But that's kind of one issue. There's got to be some solution to make these games matter a little bit more for these kids, or just, you know, do something different with the entire process, because too often these bowl games end up feeling like preseason NFL games where they just don't matter at all, and it's not even a great deal of fun to watch.
It's funny. Well, that's why picking these games, you kind of have to look at and try to guess what the motivation factor is going to be. If one team doesn't want to be there, and we've seen, you know, the Alabamas of the world, we've seen different, you know, big teams, you're in a game that you feel is beneath you and you don't want to show up. Or other teams, it's like their Super Bowl and they show up like gangbusters. So it's why picking these bowl games can be so difficult. But if you have to take the motivation factor into it, you don't always know, but you get a pretty good logical guess. To me, that's why I pick, you know, Oregon in this way. I think TCU is going to lose some of the motivating factor of losing your quarterback like that. It just seems like it's not going to be as important. And the fact that he did that probably meant they weren't taking it all that seriously going into it anyway.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
All right. So we should move on to the last 10th bowl game. Crazy. 10 bowl games for the Pac-12. The last game features
Arizona State Sun Devils.
The Arizona State Sun Devils will take on West Virginia in the Cactus Bowl. This game will be on at 7:15 p.m. tomorrow, January 2nd, on ESPN as well. The line is West Virginia currently by one, which is interesting because this is effectively a home game for Arizona State as the game takes place in Phoenix, which is about 20-minute drive, I think, the stadium from ASU's campus. So, let's kind of hear what our man Chris Cartman has to say about this game.
Here you go.
Hey, it's Chris Cartman previewing the Cactus Bowl with Arizona State and West Virginia. Sun Devils have been a difficult team to predict really this whole season. Never know whether they're going to show up on the defensive side of the football. Haven't really gotten in sync with offense and defense. West Virginia is a pretty good football team. Big 12 has been tough at the very top, as everybody knows. Baylor, Oklahoma, Oklahoma State. West Virginia was very competitive in that league. I feel like the defense is solid and mature. The offense is run-based. That's going to be something to look for. They have their top running back had nearly 1,500 rushing yards. ASU's done a great job with its run blitzes of stopping the run. I think this game, at the end of the day, probably is going to come down again to who has the bigger plays and who takes care of the football. West Virginia has a plus 11 turnover margin. ASU's been uncharacteristically bad in that category. ASU's given up the most 40-plus yard plays in the country. And its secondary hasn't done a very good job when it's blitzed, being secure on that back end. So I think this game will be not as high scoring as some of the others more recently that ASU's played in, and just the trend of college football overall. I'm going to actually take West Virginia to win this game, though, by a score of 42-37. For SunDevilSource.com, it's Chris Cartman.
All right, good stuff from Chris. I'm going to take issue with one thing he said, though, that West Virginia is good or any good at all. They're not. West Virginia is not a good football team. They lost basically to every good opponent they played this year. They lost, and really it's only four teams. They lost at Oklahoma by 20. Oklahoma State at home by 7, at Baylor by 24, and at TCU by 30. They beat Texas Tech and Texas. Neither of those teams is very good. And they beat Iowa State. I mean, the one road game they won was at Kansas. Otherwise, just not very good. They lost at Kansas State in the final game of the year. I think ASU is just a better team. I really do. I mean, I think ASU has had a tough year for sure. But I think they're fundamentally a better team, and I think it's a home game for them. So I kind of like ASU here. I think motivation we should get into the motivation thing. It can be weird if you're only playing 20 minutes from your home.
Yeah.
Especially if you were thinking about being, you know, going away for the bowl game, if you were excited about it at all. But I think, you know, most of those ASU kids, I think they'll be happy to be playing in front of friends and family again in Phoenix, in the big stadium. I think they'll be motivated. I think West Virginia, I think they'll be fairly motivated too. They get to go to a warm weather state and hang out in Phoenix and, you know, party on Mill Ave. I mean, who doesn't like that? But I think ASU will be pretty motivated, and I just think they're a better team and they're playing at home. So I like ASU to win outright. And obviously cover the half point that West Virginia is favored by.
I was kind of swinging back and forth. Chris almost talked me into it, but Dave, you brought me back to why I originally was going to pick ASU in this game. Plus, get a point. I thought ASU might be favored by a couple. The fact that West Virginia is, I'm going to go along the same lines. I think it'll be fun watching, you know, one last, you know, blitzing spectacular from the Arizona State defense.
Yeah.
What's going on? And, yeah, it's one of those teams where West Virginia just seems like the team, like you said, like the teams that are not as good, they beat. The teams that are better, they lose to. They're not as good on the road. This is essentially a road game. Maybe if West Virginia wins, I think it's going to be, they're going to be much more motivated for some reason. I just don't see that one happening. So getting a point, I'll stick with my homer picks for the Pac-12 for these last three games, and I'm going to take ASU.
All right. So we've had one different pick this entire time, Stanford game, right?
Yeah. And we're 5-1-1 so far, which is, we're already guaranteed to have a winning record, which is cool.
That's great.
And we'll see. So the Stanford game will decide who is the bowl champion pick'em. But I think we're both winners right now. We're both, you know, making the people money. Hopefully you guys bet a lot of money on all of our picks because, you know we're smart guys. We know what we're talking about.
Exactly right.
So we've got a few questions. You want to get to a few questions?
We'll wrap it up. And again, we apologize for not having this up on New Year's Eve. It's been a little crazy, but you know, New Year's morning, give you something to listen to while you watch
the cure for the common hangover. Right?
Yes.
Just call it that. That's all this is. All right. We've got Earl in West LA, our good friend. He says, looking forward to the Pac-12 roundup. Guys, what makes college football so great is it is unpredictable. In some ways, the Nebraska game was perhaps the safest bet of the first five Pac-12 bowl opponents. There is no way I envisioned the Bruins losing to a 5-7 Big Ten team. It is just as hard to believe the USC game plan of pounding the rock and getting Rosen off his spot would work just as well a month later. Finally, I've never heard of a player signing with an agent the week before a bowl game. Is this a player putting himself before his team, or is there more to this story? Looking forward to year two of the Pac-12 podcast with more listeners than the Pac-12 network has viewers. Happy New Year, Earl in West LA. Happy New Year, Earl. I think we both more or less said we envisioned a 5-7 Big Ten team beating the Bruins, or at least covering their 7 points. So we kind of foresaw it. I always question UCLA's motivation in bowl games. The Alex Redmond thing, signing with an agent the week before the bowl game, was a little weird. He posted later that it's also academics. He wasn't academically eligible, but still, it's just, you know, it's not a good PR thing. It's another kind of bad PR thing for UCLA this year, starting with, you know, the weird thing with Miles Jack, where he signed with an agent mid-season after injuring his knee. Just, you know, weird stuff happening all year. There's more to it than just the, you know, Redmond deciding he was going to do that randomly. He was academically, he wasn't going to be able to play in the bowl game anyway. So I think he just kind of figured get started and, you know, stop bothering with attending class and all that kind of stuff. So, you know, good luck to him. But yeah, there was a little bit more to it than just him quitting.
That's the other factor too, when we talk about bowl games, is that some players just can't play because of academics. It's a different, it, you know, ends up the semester ends and all that kind of stuff, and the finals come in, and like you find out a player that just isn't able to play. And I didn't know the full story there, but when that happened, that was what I was figuring, Dave, was like, it has to be no really reason to do that unless you're really just mad or whatever. But if you're academically ineligible, then you might as well just part ways at that point.
I guess. All right, our man Nick with his recap. Week 2 bowl game recap. Hi, this is Nick from Cypress. Well, everyone in Southern California is singing the blues, but the Pac-12 is looking good. The U-14 versus Washington State 20, so Washington State finishes the year with 9 wins. Who would have thought that after losing in week 1? Gotta say, Coach Leach did something right to right the ship. Congrats, Cougs. UW-44 versus Southern Miss 31, well, UW wins number 7 and has a better year than most expect. Good win. UCLA 29 versus Nebraska 37, well, UCLA started strong, then gave the game away in the end. Bad loss, no excuses, this was a team with 5 wins. What excuse does Mora have for this loss? Cal 55 versus Air Force 36. Huge win for Cal and Jared Goff. Cal gets 8 wins and will leave for the NFL. Good win for Cal. USC 21 versus Wisconsin 23. Well, slow start, no rhythm, bad start to the game. D played well. Offense was inconsistent. Wisconsin made plays to win. SC didn't. By the way, I'm an SC fan, and that was a TD run by Wisconsin. And an SEC crew ref team blew it big time. I'm sure the Pac-12 refs will bring that up in media day to say, see, we're not that bad, LOL. Nonetheless, not the ideal start to Coach Helton's SC coaching career. All good stuff from Nick, and then he's got some questions. Which of these teams surprised you in a good way during Week 2 Bowl Week, and who disappointed you guys? My biggest surprise was Cal, and my biggest disappointment was, I guess, UCLA, but tie ball game between UCLA and USC, but definitely the biggest surprise in a good way was Cal for me.
Yeah, I think I would go with Cal as well. I mean, Washington State getting that win and the way they did, where I didn't think they'd win a 20-14 game or whatever it was. So that's a little bit of a surprise for me. It was definitely UCLA the most disappointing. I was picking certain to pick Wisconsin and the points. I was teetering on the edge of picking UCLA to cover, against, Nebraska, even knowing that they lost like 4 heartbreakers and they could have easily had 7 or 8 wins. I just felt like the motivation factor would be there. So I was going back and forth. I ended up coming to, you know, take Nebraska in the points, but, I was a little more disappointed in them. I just thought that, you know, the Wisconsin game for USC went the way I thought it was going to go. the Nebraska game did not go the way I thought it was going to go. So that'll be my bigger disappointment.
Yeah, okay. I'm with you on that. UCLA definitely my biggest disappointment. David Woods, what did you make of the bowl game and early departures? So like I said, I think UCLA is probably the biggest disappointment of the bowl season so far for the Pac-12. The early departures are weird. Not any individual decision is super weird. Like, if you know the individual factors in every one, you can kind of look at it and say, okay. But the fact that so many juniors have left, so many guys who are, you know, they might get drafted and they might not. They're marginal draft prospects. Nobody's been, I think Redmond is probably the one where you would say there's probably not much of a chance he gets drafted, which he's probably similar to the Ellis McCarthy situation last year. Everyone else, I think there's a reasonable chance they get drafted, but it's just kind of, it's concerning. Whenever you lose guys the way UCLA has lost guys this year with, not just the guys leaving for the NFL, but transfers mid-season, like Fred Perry, guys like Chris Clark, I don't know if you can link all these issues. Any individual issue, again, is, you know, it's its own separate thing, but the fact that all these things are happening is obviously not a good thing for UCLA.
It's funny, the LA school's got enough drama for like two conferences, let alone...
Oh, yeah, this year has been the year of the LA schools just... making more headlines for non-football reasons than anyone.
Yeah.
Ryan, what do you think happens for Coach Clay Helton going forward? Any positive news you can tell us? Maybe bring Aranda, I hope?
Yeah, so we don't know. He had a conference call last night. We had a New Year's Eve conference call, the last one of the football season, and he didn't have any updates on the assistant coaching hires, but it looks like they're going to bring in his brother, Tyson Helton, and, you know, from, Western Kentucky, and the offensive line coach there, Neil Callaway, who's actually been the head coach at Alabama, Birmingham, played at Alabama. I kind of like that. I thought they needed to bring in some experienced coaches. Tyson Helton, you know, not all that experienced. He's been at WKU as the offensive coordinator for a couple of years, but, Neil Callaway, if they get him, excuse me. If they get him, I think he's like, you know, some guy that has some gray hair, been around a while. I think he'd be a good hire. We don't really know on the defensive coordinator side, which I think is kind of the most important. I think really the offensive line coach is very important. If they get Callaway, that would probably be good. As far as the defensive coordinator, we've heard Clancy Pendergast is back in the mix after initially turning USC down. His situation up at the 49ers, they could all be in limbo, all those coaches there. But Dave Aranda, I mean, I think he had a pretty good showing against USC in the Holiday Bowl. He would be a good one as well. He's the defensive coordinator for Wisconsin. But we don't know yet. We're not sure which direction they're going to go. But it seems like within the next week or so, he'll probably have that staff kind of ironed out.
All right, good stuff. And then he asks, Pac-12 5-2, do we get to the magical 7 wins we predicted? And I think we're saying yes right now. So, yeah.
I think so, yeah.
And then last question, can we get basketball news? LOL, I went there. Not yet. Not yet. We might get into some doldrums in January where we need to talk some basketball, but not yet.
The conference season's starting now, right? Like,
yeah, UCLA plays Washington tonight. I think some games were played already yesterday, but whatever.
All right.
Alex from Pasadena, this is the last question of the day. Hola, amigos. Now that both Southern Cal and UCLA seasons are over, what's your best and worst part of each season? Also, thanks for being brutally honest with the listeners. Keep up the great work. Best and worst part of the season for UCLA and USC. You know what we should do, Ryan?
What?
We should make a note. Can you take a note right now?
Sure.
Let's do this for every Pac-12 school next week. Instead of just answering this question for UCLA and USC, let's do that for every Pac-12 school. That'll give us a nice little recap show.
Okay.
Best part of the season for Oregon, worst part of the season for Oregon. Best part for Washington, worst part for Washington.
Yeah.
Because I think we don't want to make it too LA-centric, and we'll need to do some research before we answer that for all the other schools.
I like that. And there's we're limited to one worst thing, because I can think of a whole bunch for USC at least.
That's what makes it fun, though. You have to think of the worst thing.
All right. That's
not
cool.
The many bad things. Not the many awful things, just the worst thing.
And if you're a fan of the Cougars or whoever, any of the Pac-12 schools, and you want to send in your nominations for best and worst, email us, Pac-12podcast@gmail.com, and let us know. and help us in our decision making. We all have our own picks. I like that. That'll be a good show next week, Dave.
Yeah, let's do that. All right, good stuff from Alex. You just gave us an idea for an hour-long podcast.
Yeah.
All right, well, that's it for me. That's Sweet. It for me in 2016.
Man, the first show, this probably is the first podcast anyone will listen to in 2016. It was actually recorded in 2016 because we're recording it in the morning.
Yeah.
But Dave, good stuff. Thanks for hanging with me in my hangover state.
Never a problem, Ryan. This is the cure for all hangovers.
Yes. I've never done a podcast hungover like this. My first one. Hopefully you guys enjoyed it. It was good. So we recapped 5 games. We previewed 3 more. We answered your questions. We got a new idea for a show next week. So enjoy the rest of the New Year 6 bowls and the rest of all of the bowl games, the Pac-12 teams and all of that. Thanks for tuning in. That's David Woods. I'm Ryan Abraham, and we are the Podcast of Champions.